Sharks fans, don't miss your chance to be at the Can't Miss Games of the Year and see the newest members of the Sharks. On July 2nd, we will announce the 2024-25 season schedule, and individual game tickets will go on sale that same day. Visit sjsharks.com/tickets to sign up for a ticket on sale alert. That's sjsharks.com/tickets.
You're listening to the Sharks Audio Network. Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Draft preview time, everyone. Friday afternoon, it is going down from Sphere in Las Vegas and at SAP Center at our draft party, where we will be broadcasting live as the Sharks make what could be a franchise-defining pick with the number one overall selection. We are going to first chat with Craig Button of TSN and then Curtis Peschelka of Bay Area News Group, both of whom had some great thoughts and insights to share. All right, we are now joined on the Sharks Audio Network by Craig Button, of course, analyst extraordinaire with TSN. And I don't think there's anybody out there that knows more about the draft and the prospect world, and that's why we've got him on here today. Craig, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Yeah, nothing going on. Thanks for the kind words. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun, and I've been doing it for a long time, and I really enjoy it. It's, you watch the young players, and you start to watch them. In some cases at 15, in most cases by the time they're 16, and then you watch the progression, and then you start to see them not just progress into their draft year and be selected by NHL teams and start the process of fulfilling their dreams of playing in the NHL, but then you watch them become stars in the NHL. And I always say, like, it's the future of the NHL when you're watching. I tell people, whether you're watching college hockey or watching junior hockey in North America or in Europe, like, go and spend the $25 to go watch these players. Like, if you're a BU fan and you want to watch the next star in the NHL, go spend $25 and watch Macklin Celebrini, because it's going to cost you about $125 at the minimum in the years to come to see him in the NHL. So if you want to watch tomorrow's stars today, go and watch college hockey, go and watch junior hockey. And I think it's just fascinating. You know, the players are so dedicated, they're so committed, and they're wide-eyed and innocent at the same time. And it all kind of comes together at the draft. I ran into somebody that was buying a suit for the draft. He goes, yeah, I'd like something nice, but not too flashy. And I said, just like your game. Like, your game's good, but it's not flashy. And he started to laugh. He goes, yeah, I don't want to have all the attention on me. He goes, those are for the guys higher up in the draft.
That's a good line. Although last year, I felt the first round had the most flashy suits that we'd seen in a while. Not quite up to where the NBA is yet, but it seemed like there were pinstripes last year. There were a lot of bright blues, and you know, if it gets people paying attention, I'm all for it. You know, you brought up something that I wanted to touch on, and that's talking about, you know, these guys getting attention now when they're 15 years old and, you know, working towards their draft eligible year. And obviously hockey circles have always talked, but now, you know, these kids through social media and the podcast sphere and video getting disseminated, you know, at a very young age everywhere, they start getting discussed and pumped up from a very young age. And I'm curious, you know, if you think that impacted the Sharks' decision to make Ryan Warsawski their new head coach, who's 36 years old. He's going to be 37 in October. He understands the social media, the podcast, the modern age. Do you think that had an impact on, you know, why he was hired or what made him a good candidate? Mike Greer didn't specifically say so when I asked him, but when I asked Warsawski, when we had our big press conference for his hiring, he thought it would help at the very least.
Well, I think the recognition that, you know, how the player coach relationship is presently is really important, you know, to affect performance. You know, coaches are brought to get players to play to the best of their abilities, to get a team to coalesce and play to its potential. So how you connect and how you communicate and how you work with the players who are integral to the success of it is really important. And if you don't understand that, you're going to struggle with it. And certainly we see how players take in information now. It's different than players did it 20 years ago. And if you're not up to speed and you're not understanding how the players listen, how they learn, do they watch, do they need to hear, how much instruct. Every player is different. And I think that if you're a coach in the, I don't think, if you're a coach in the NHL, you have a message, you're always selling. And you better be able to not only be clear in what you're selling, you also have to be clear in understanding what the players are hearing. Jim Playfair, who I worked with a long time, and he said this to me a long time ago. He said, it's not what you say, it's what they hear. Mm-hmm. And it's profound. And I think that that's the case with any good coach. Ryan comes in, certainly he's a little bit closer in age to the younger players, been working with them. But John Cooper's a great communicator. John Cooper's had great – Jared Bednar's a great communicator, and certainly you see that. Scotty Bowman didn't last for five decades because he didn't adapt to changing times. So, right. you got to understand who you're dealing with, what's going to help them be the best they can be so that you can help the team, be successful. So I think they're all factors in – The interview process with respect to coaches, Mike Greer has played for a lot of different coaches and understanding, okay, where's my team at? What would be a right fit here? Every coach comes with an expiry date. I don't care who you are, or what your name is, or how much success you've had. And in the rare cases, you get to choose on your own. In the vast majority of cases, somebody chooses that expiry date for you. But it doesn't mean you're not a good coach. And what did you learn? And where are you coming from? And I think those are all really important to be successful. And certainly Ryan coming in there, he's got coaching experience. And now you look at a team. And what I would say with San Jose, you're bringing in a young coach. Let him grow with your team. You're going to let the players grow and learn as they proceed. Do the same thing with the coach. As long as you believe that he's doing the things that you think are important to development and success of the team and the individuals.
Before we get into this draft specifically, I just want to go 30,000 foot level on Sharks prospects as they exist right now. Obviously, you and I talked right after the Timo Meier trade. You were big on Shakir Mukhmadulin, and we got a little bit of a look at him this past year. And a guy that big, the orbit with his stick is really fun to watch. But there's also the late season acquisition of Colin Graf, which I think flew under the radar because I think he's got big upside potential. But then there's Will Smith, who signed his deal with the Sharks at entry level. There's Quentin Musty. There's Philip Bisted. We can keep on going down the list. When you look at the Sharks prospect pool as it exists now, compared with what it was before Mike Greer came in, it seems very obvious that, it's much better standing now. But when you do look at these names and the potential that we are going to see a Will Smith this year and maybe a Quentin Musty as well, and we expect to see Shakir Mukhmadulin, where are you on these up-and-coming players?
I think that good teams are made up of all types of different players. I think the first thing that I would recognize is that the San Jose Sharks were a really top-end team for a lot of years. So to not only be a top-end team, just look at the players they drafted and good players that came in and moves that they made to acquire other good players. And certainly that's going to impact you with respect to prospects because you're trading picks and you're trading first-round draft picks. But what the San Jose Sharks did for decades was really, really impressive. And you reach a point where you go, okay, we're going to have to change our direction here somewhat. And in the case of the San Jose Sharks, it turned 180 degrees. And that was just the reality of the situation. Now, what do you do with the reality of the situation? It's great to say, okay, this is our reality. We're going to do a rebuild, but then you got to go about it. And there's different ways to do it. You do it through the draft. You do it through free agency. Colin Graf comes to mind. You do it through trades. Shakir Mukhmadulin comes to mind. Obviously Will Smith's a really good player. William Eklund, I think, took massive strides forward this year for the San Jose Sharks. And you're able to now – you're on the receiving end. You're getting picks for what you're trading. David Ekstrom is going to be a really good player. He comes over in the Thomas Hertl trade from Vegas. Now I look at the team and I start to see a prospect pool that has a team isn't going to be successful with all the same types of players. Yeah, you need players that can do different things, and that's just that's the way it is. In football, you can't have a quarterback and 10 wide receivers. You need a tight end. You need a center. You need a left guard. You need a right tackle. And they're all different. And certainly how you build your team is going to be really critical to having success. And I think that's what Mike has done here. I mean, I think Shakir Mukamadul and that type of a defender is critically important to success. You start to look at Quentin Musty, a playmaking offensive player. You get him a little bit deeper in the draft. Eklund's high. Will Smith, the leading scorer in the NCAA this year. Colin Graf comes over as a free agent. And you don't have to ask me about Colin Graf. Ask Will Smith. Will Smith knows how good Colin Graf is. And that to me was one of the best available players coming out of the NCAA free agent ranks. So all I'm pointing out is I think that you start to look at their center ice position, you start to look, and I'll just go to where I think, you know, they're going to draft Macklin Celebrini. They have Will Smith. They traded for David Edstrom. You build up through the middle. You got skill in different areas. Musty, I mentioned William Eklund. Colin Graf's a good player. Now you go to the blue line. Now they're starting to build it out. And we'd all like to snap our fingers and have it done overnight. Doesn't happen that way. And I think that in my view, the San Jose Sharks are building a really good, solid pool of not just prospects, but of difference makers. There's a big difference between having lots of good prospects and having lots of good difference makers. San Jose Sharks are on the way to having difference makers.
We know Macklin Celebrini is going to be the number one pick. It's an odd thing that they have a spoiler of this sense, because oftentimes there's questions, but last year, clear-cut number one. This year, clear-cut number one. When you look big picture at Macklin Celebrini, and I'm sure you've been asked this a million times at this point, but what do you see, and maybe what are people not talking about that they should be at this point of his career, where he's on the cusp of what everyone thinks is becoming a star in the NHL? It might not happen this year. Obviously, he hasn't said whether or not he is going to play, but you know, he has the skill set we assume that will take him to be what many believe is a franchise defining player.
Yeah, and you know, I'll be straightforward with you. I think I'm somebody that could be put into the pool of maybe in one area I've underestimated him a little bit, and I think Macklin is outstanding. You know, I use one word, all capital letters. He's complete. Now, I may have underestimated a little bit of him in terms of offensive prowess, and I'm talking at the NHL level. And I've compared him to Jonathan Toews as that complete player. And Jonathan Toews, and I use the term foundational player, Jonathan Toews was a foundational player for the Chicago Blackhawks. He set the standard for how you were going to play. He set the standard for an organization, for a team. And in fact, whatever jersey that Jonathan Toews pulled over his head, that he set a standard, and he was a complete player. He was a player that did it all, and did it in the hard areas, and did it at a high level. Now his offense, Jonathan's offense, he's going to the Hall of Fame. His offense might not be where Macklin Celebrini can get to offensively. And you start to watch USHL, 16-year-old player, best player in the league, never done before. Hobie Baker winner at 17 in the NCAA, third leading scorer. So if there's any area that I would say about Macklin, maybe I'm not giving him enough platitudes for being so good offensively because he is. But there is no area of the game that that Macklin Celebrini is not going to be able to impact. When he's out on the ice, like wherever he is on the ice, whatever situation he is in, he's going to be able to impact the game in a positive manner. That's what Jonathan Toews did. And, you know, you think about franchise players. That's what you're calling a player of this ilk to do, to make an impact on your team in all the situations. And I don't have any doubt that Macklin will do that. I look at the San Jose Sharks. I see Will Smith, who was the fourth overall pick last year. I see Macklin Celebrini, who's going to be the first overall pick this year. And it conjures up the idea that the Pittsburgh Penguins, before they drafted Sidney Crosby, they had Evgeny Malkin. Well, for the San Jose Sharks, their Evgeny Malkin is Will Smith. And like Sidney Crosby, I think Macklin Celebrini can come into the San Jose Sharks and eventually help them be competitive for Stanley Cups.
The next question is the 14th overall pick, which the Sharks have as well. What do you think is going to happen there? I know that there's some talk of, you know, a blue liner with that position, but I also know that, you know, Mike Greer, he could very well decide that if there's something there he doesn't like, he could trade and, you know, pick something up for next year maybe. Or there is also the thought that the Sharks could use that to try and bring in, you know, players this year to try and improve things. Mike Greer has been big on not skipping steps, but I also know that from the business end of things, you've had two seasons in which you've had 41 wins combined, and you have a franchise in the Golden State Warriors, which are seemingly at the end of their run. There might be a desire to bring in, you know, more talent to the Sharks to have them start to progress quickly. That said, you can't get ahead of yourself. Just like Mike Greer said, you don't want to skip steps. So well, what do you see happening with that 14th overall pick?
I would say to you that all those options are on the table. And I think that because you have some really good prospects and you have some players that are ready to turn pro, some players that are taking their game. I talk about William Eklund taking his game to another level. Now what Mike Greer can do is assess it all. So let's just assume that he's sitting there at 14. There's going to be good players there that he can consider. There's going to be wingers. There's going to be centers. There's going to be defenders. Like, there's no question that Mike will be able – there's not going to be somebody sitting at 14 who goes, I don't like any of these players. Just not going to happen. But there's also going to be teams that are going to be looking and saying, geez, we can – like, okay, Mike, like, would you trade your pick? We really like this player. Now Mike can consider that. There's also – because I called it the COVID CBA – for 4 years, the salary cap stayed flat. There's a thawing of that now, and the cap's going up, and I think there's going to be more movement. So it's going to present opportunity, not just for Mike Greer, but other NHL teams. Can we add some younger talent? You look at what Kent Hughes did two consecutive years in Montreal. He traded for Kirby Dach, who was the third overall pick at a certain age. Trades for Alex Newhook, you know, at a certain age. And When you start to consider those different types of options, I think that they very well can be there or will be there for Mike Greer. You got to balance it out, and the calculus on that is okay, what does this mean? What are we doing with our younger players? How can these players influence our younger players? You know, that's really – and how can they grow with your younger players? I think when Mike says skipping steps – he's not talking about not trying to improve the team. He's looking at trying to do it in concert, like building blocks, and understand, okay, if we do trade the 14th pick for help right now, what does that help look like? And it can't be just for a year. It's got right. Like, that's why I bring up Kirby Dach and Alex Newhook and what Montreal did. And I think that becomes an opportunity. It was different last year in Chicago. Kyle Davidson brought in Taylor Hall and he brought in Nick Foligno to be – like just support systems for Connor Bedard. I don't think anybody's kidding themselves in Chicago thinking that those two guys are going to be part of the future in 3-4 years time. But you also have to insulate your players in different ways too. And I think that's why I say all options are on the table, and Mike's going to be able to, but when the skipping steps thing, I think it's about making sure that what we're doing is continuing to build, and we might build a little bit this way, we might build a little bit that way, but we're going to continue to build forward. We're not going to get ourselves stagnated.
If we look at what we've seen from Mike Greer in the draft up to this point, and I know that his first draft, he didn't have much time. He was hired just beforehand, but Will Smith maybe seemed like the obvious number four pick. This year, Macklin Celebrini, the obvious number one pick. But beyond that, when you look at the other players that he's acquired, if you're looking at some of the other draft capital that he's been able to bring into the system, is there a schematic for the type of player that Mike Greer is drafting? And when you look at the list of available names that you're saying, oh, if he's available at 14, that's who the Sharks are going to go for? Or is it just a matter of seeing, you know, the talent that's there when you get to the 14th pick? Because like I said, it seems... with the number four pick, it was obvious that they were going to get Will Smith if he was available. He was. This year with Macklin, that's the obvious pick in, you know, talented players. It gets a little bit more into the woods after that when you're looking at the, you know, top five picks. Those are usually pretty clear cut.
Yeah, and that is accurate. So there's a couple of layers I want to go through this first with. And the first one is Mike Greer, the person. I've watched Mike Greer since he was at St. Sebastian's school in Boston. And, you know, Mike Greer was a hard player. He was a player that was determined and competitive and wouldn't allow himself to be denied. And he was a player, it took him a little bit longer to find his way in the NHL. But when he did, he was a player that was hard to play against. He was a player that when the puck dropped, he was all in. He was in the competitive fight. He was in the competitive battles. So what I would say is knowing how Mike played and knowing Mike's personality is, if you're not competitive, I don't think you're getting consideration by Mike Greer. That's number one. I think that now that becomes character type, right? And every organization is going to say, we want this type of player. We want the players to have these types of traits and qualities and characteristics. Different players are going to have different skill sets. So I don't think it comes down to one player ever. I think there's always a group of players that you're considering at any point in the draft, whether it be the fifth round or whether it be at 14th overall. But you want to make sure that those players fit the type of player you want to bring in the organization. And I have no doubt. I mean, Shakir Mukhamudulin, just as an example, trading for him from New Jersey, to me, he's a big-time competitor. William Ekblad might not be as big as Shakir Mukhamudulin, but he's a big-time competitor. Right. Will Smith, big-time competitor. Macklin Celebrini, big-time competitor. David Edstrom, big-time competitor. Like, do you see there's a trait that runs right through? And yeah, David Edstrom's different than Will Smith, and Will Smith's different than Macklin Celebrini, who's different than William Ekblad. But they have the skill. You can't make it to the NHL if you don't have skill. But those competitive traits, those characteristics that you want to have show up on your team in the games that are hard, that's what Mike Greer was about. That's what Mike Greer is about. That's what Mike Greer was about as a player. That's what he is about now. We know that his father and his brother, lots of success in the NFL. I don't think that the traits that Mike is looking for are any different than the ones that he displayed as a player. And he played with really good, gifted players too. So he recognizes skill. But skill without will doesn't get you wins.
Well said. As a last one for you, and this is brought up a lot, is how do you make sure that the Sharks, with their draft capital, with their players, with their prospects, and I'm not trying to use this to be mean, but they'll say, oh, you don't want a situation like Buffalo. Or they'll say, you know, look at all the talent in New Jersey, you know, and they couldn't do anything last year. It's been a little bit, you know, rough and tumble for them. They didn't turn in what they wanted to, and they have a lot of top end talent. I guess, is there a path, you know, that will allow you to consistently take those steps? Is there a blueprint out there in the NHL? And I know it's something that people are looking for, but I'm not so sure that it exists, because if it did, it seemed like it would be so obvious to be like, oh yes, we're going to capitalize upon our high draft picks. And then in 3-4 seasons, we're going to be, you know, in the Western Conference final, and then we'll be in the Cup final, and then, you know, we'll see what happens after that. But it's never a clear cut path.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it was just plug and play, wouldn't it? And just like, you know, like you know, hey, listen, you get this 500-piece puzzle. Okay, we'll put the corners in, and then we'll fill in the middle, and oh boy, there we go, the puzzle's completed. You're right, there is no template for that. I think every situation is different. You talk about, you know, the business of a team. And let's not forget the business of hockey and understanding that where your team is at and how you want to try to move it forward. But Mike talked about not skipping steps. The process is tried and true. You better understand that you can't snap your fingers and get it all in place in one. It's not like you can get one player or two players right away. You're drafting players, it takes time for them to mature and develop. I'll give you an example and one that I lived in Dallas. And everybody says you were close, like you got a guy that helped you win a Stanley Cup. In 1995, we drafted Jerome Iginla, 11th overall. And in December of that year, we traded Jerome Iginla for Joe Nieuwendyk. And lots of people say, oh boy, you traded, that helped you win a Stanley Cup. Our team in the 95-96 season was awful. We were terrible. You know, Ken Hitchcock came in to coach our team in the new year. Joe Nieuwendyk came. We weren't in a position where we were looking to add a player that was going to help us win a Stanley Cup.
Right.
But we had a lot of good young players. We had Mike Modano. We had Darian Hatcher. We had Richard Matvichuk. We had Yuri Lehtinen who turned pro. We had a young Jamie Lagerbrunner. We had a good group of really good young players. And what we were trying to do was add players that could influence those guys in a significant way, and that we also felt would be part of our group long term. We signed Joe Nieuwendyk to a 5-year contract. He was a star in the NHL at that time. Jerome McGinnis was a really good player, somebody we really coveted. But we had to make that decision, not being on the cusp of winning a Stanley Cup, but being on the cusp of who could influence our players. Joe Nieuwendyk walked into our team and walked into our room like that, because he'd won a Stanley Cup, he'd been a 50-goal scorer, been an all-star, and that's what I talk about with the influence. So when you start to look at the steps, you don't know what steps at any particular time are going to, but if you have a feel for your team and you have a feel for your group, and that's why I go back to my earlier answer to you, is when you asked me about, you know, what can you do with this pick? I think everything has to be done with how do you influence your group of players that somebody can be a part of it. Now, it's not always exact like that. And sometimes you're going to make a decision, and sometimes you're going to try to move forward, and it doesn't work exactly how you did it. But I believe that if you understand that the next quick fix will be the first quick fix, listen, we can look, there's going to be case studies on the Buffalo Sabres. A big part of that is the fact they've had such a massive changeover in management. And so what I would say to the San Jose Sharks management, if you believe in Mike Greer and you believe in his management group, trust them. Let them build. Like, if it comes to a point where you think that, like, okay, maybe there's a change that needs to be happening, okay, that's different. But don't make change just because you haven't won. Don't make change just because it's not going as fast as you are. Believe in the people that have started this process, that are executing the plan. And I think Mike is an excellent guy to execute the plan.
And the other part, Craig, is that now there's another generation of Aginla here to make us all feel that much older, right?
Well, you know, we drafted Teague, or Jerome, sorry, 29 years ago. And like, so Teague is going to turn 18 in August, right? And I pinch myself. Honestly, I pinch myself and I think, oh boy, like, you know, oh, here's this young Teague. And I remember him just as a little guy. Like, yeah. You know, now here he is on the cusp of being drafted, you know, high in the first round, and certainly showing and displaying a lot of the same types of traits and everything that goes with it. And it that's the fun part of being around the young players and watching them all. But, you know, Jerome ended up being a great player, face of the Calgary Flames for years, one of the great players of all time. But again, you know, that wasn't an easy trade to make. But what pushed it to the other side and making it was what we felt would influence our young players. And you're going to be faced with hard decisions at times. And that, I think a lot of times too, teams like become too protective. Mm-hmm. And that's not a negative, but just saying, well, wait a sec, when will this opportunity arise again? And, you know, I joked with Ray Ferraro about this. I said, Ray, if you would have signed with us that summer, we would have never traded for Joe Nieuwendyk. But you didn't sign with us. And, you know, so then we had to go make a trade for Joe Nieuwendyk. And Ray was a really good player.
Yeah.
And people say that, well, you wouldn't have won the Cup without Nieuwendyk. And I said, I'll take my chances with Ray Ferraro and Joel McGinley. And Ray always says, oh, yeah, me too.
It's all a process. The dominoes start falling and everything is different the next day than it was previously. But Craig, I know you had stuff to do, so I will let you go, but I appreciate your time. Enjoy the heck out of the draft, and I'll be bugging you soon, all right?
Anytime you want to bug me, always my pleasure to join you.
Again, great stuff there with Craig Button of TSN looking ahead to the Sharks draft. Now we are going to bring in Curtis Pashelka of Bay Area News Group. Curtis, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing very well, man. I'm excited for Friday. I think this will be a big day and a big moment. You know, before we dive into all the draft stuff, wanted to get your reaction to the hiring of Ryan Warsofsky as the new head coach for the San Jose Sharks.
Well, I think, you know, he was certainly a coach I think the Sharks didn't want to necessarily lose. I mean, I think they thought highly of him. Even 2 years ago when he first interviewed for the head coaching job, certainly impressed, I think, Mike Greer at that standpoint. And then, you know, going through this process as well, I think Mike wanted a guy who could grow with this team, a young coach who kind of knew the personnel, kind of knew what made guys tick. And just kind of just felt that this, even though he's only 36 years old, felt that Ryan was sort of the right guy for the team at this juncture, at this stage of their rebuild. So certainly a bold hire, having to bring in a guy with no head coach, NHL coaching experience, kind of goes against the grain a little bit when you talk about league-wide hires. But certainly Ryan's going to get an opportunity here to show what he can do as the head coach of the Sharks as they enter into this new phase.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And, you know, I think back to, you know, Todd McClellan was relatively young when they hired him. And then you go back to Kevin Constantine, was 34. And then you look at some of the other coaches around the NHL that have had success lately, Cooper, Bednar. I am looking at this, Curtis, in the sense that he's young. He understands the modern era, the modern athlete. And that's not to discount anyone, you know, on our side of 40, not understanding the modern athlete. But if you are building so heavily with, you know, Will Smith and Quentin Musty and what we assume will be Macklin Celebrini and Colin Graf and all these young guys, then I view it as a positive to have a young coach. But when I asked Mike Greer about it, he said it really wasn't that much of a determining factor in making the hiring.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is an important hire for Mike Greer. You're 2 years removed from hiring your last coach in David Quinn, and obviously that didn't work out the way the Sharks hoped to, and they can't be back in this position 2 years from now just saying, well, you know, we'll try it again here. I mean, this is a coach that has to sort of work out here for a few years at least, just to help get the Sharks to where they want to be in terms of being on a competitive team again. So, it's just a matter of now Ryan wants to fill out his staff. And I think he indicated he wants to at least bring Thomas Spear back. I think he worked well with the goalies last year. And so we'll see what the staff looks like. And then, what kind of players he's going to be working with after free agency, what kind of roster this looks like.
Yeah, free agency starts at the beginning of July. Already they've made a couple of moves, including the Barclay-Goodrow situation, which Mike Greer touched on a little bit yesterday. There had been some reporting that, you know, Goodrow was a little gobsmacked and, you know, had the Sharks on his no-trade list, but because of the way it went down, it didn't, you know, it was not New York trading him per se. What do you make of the move? And then do you think Barclay-Goodrow, who has good relationships with a lot of people here in San Jose, like a Logan Couture, like a Joe Thornton, as was referenced by Mike Greer, what's your take there?
Well, I think he's the player that the Sharks really value at this, you know, where they're at right now, just bringing a respected veteran, a guy who plays a certain way, has certain nuances to his game, I think are valuable to the Sharks right now. You think it, you know, the amount of defensive zone draws he took last year for the Rangers, that's valuable. Right. He's a leading penalty killer in terms of time on ice last year for the Rangers. And that was valuable to them. I mean, he's a guy who sticks up for his teammates. And that's certainly a trait that, you know, Mike Greer wants and respects and wants more of on this team. So I think from that aspect, and, you know, people talk about the cap hit, it's not really a big deal to the Sharks. I mean, they got tons of cap space right now. Maybe it's a little much for being a third or fourth line player, but it's really not a big concern right now, in my opinion, for the Sharks. You just want to know for sure. And we talked to Mike about this yesterday about, is Barclay happy? Is he going to be a happy camper once he comes to San Jose? Because obviously he was disappointed and probably a little bit shocked too about the way the Rangers just kind of cast him aside, put him on waivers. And, they knew that the Sharks were going to claim him. So, that was, something that we tried to clear up yesterday. And I think the impression is that, you know, Mike talked to Barclay's agents and has the impression that, you know, once he gets to San Jose, things will be okay. But maybe that there is just, he just needs maybe a little bit of time to help process everything and figure out, coming to San Jose it could mean for him and his career going forward as well.
You heard Mike yesterday talk about the tough to play against, high level compete. You know, Cam Atkinson's another name that's been thrown around. What is your expectation in free agency, Curtis? Because on the one hand, Mike Grier has consistently said he does not want to skip steps. But I also juxtapose that with some of the things that Jonathan Becker said at the Warsawski press conference, where he said, hey, you know, we haven't seen ticket sales like this since the Cup run in 2016. We, you know, have 12,000 tickets distributed for the draft party. You know, it feels like there is an air of excitement. And, you know, you and I saw a lot of empty seats at the building last year, which you go back and tell me in 2012 that there would be empty seats when the Red Wings were in town, I would look at you like you were crazy. But I mean, fans have gone through a half decade now of, you know, having, you know, not great hockey out there on the ice and not as much that they want to go out there and see. You know, how much pressure is there on Mike to bring in not guys that are going to make them, you know, superstars and a super team overnight, but to have them, you know, considerably better than 41 wins in the last two seasons combined?
Yeah, there's definitely a balancing act, right, for Mike Grier here at this stage. It's like you said, you don't want to necessarily just skip steps to start handing out 8-year contracts, 7-8 year contracts to guys, and, you know, being back in the same position you just were in, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, in terms of being able to cap strap. So I think Mike talked yesterday about, you know, giving out deals, maybe more in the 1 to 3, the 1 to 4 range to certain free agents. They're not, in my opinion, I don't think they're going to be shopping at the top end of the market. Mm-hmm. So don't look for maybe Jake Gensel to come to San Jose necessarily. Although you never know. I mean, we'll see what happens. But, yeah. But you know, I think it's a stage that the Sharks are certainly excited about, but they don't want to get too ahead of themselves. That Mike Grier still thinks that he wants to build something for the long haul here and not just a quick fix. And that just, so that means, you know, like you said, bringing in the younger players, supporting them as much as possible. So I do, at free agency, I would expect him to add more, you know, maybe middle six type forwards. I think they want to bring in a top six forward, just to offensively support some of your young stars here. And then, you know, help, you know, obviously put some guys in a position too, where they don't have to be rushed to the NHL.
Right.
Like you mentioned Colin Graf. I mean, if he's not ready, if he doesn't come into camp and show that he belongs in the NHL, well, then you have no problem putting him in the American League, because you've got other guys to sort of help fill that role too. So I think it was Mike Grier's, you know, he's trying to say that, you know, this is not a place where he wants to sort of just rush into it and you know, all of a sudden, you know, spend the cap and things along that nature, but just sort of let things progress at the way he wants it to go right now. And you know, maybe in next summer when some of these contracts come off the books, or the following offseason,
right,
that's when you see the Sharks really dive in and sort of spend the type of money that they used to spend and spend to the cap, and then try at that point to sort of be a playoff contending team, and while also, you know, having a team that can last and have a nucleus together for a long time.
At the Warsawski press conference, another comment that I thought was interesting by Mike Grier was saying that Logan Couture was not going to be traded. Does that give you hope that his situation with the, you know, pelvic groin inflammation is doing well? Or is that maybe Mike Grier trying to give Logan himself a boost of confidence? Because Logan, when we talked to him, maybe it was at the hurdle deadline when he said he was going to be out for the year. I mean, didn't he say something to the effect of, nobody's going to trade for me anyway, I know what my situation is, my age, my injury?
Yeah, I mean, Logan Couture cannot be traded unless you get maybe a third team involved to help take some of his contract, some of that cap hit away. Like you said, he's injured. His future is unknown right now. You know, $8 million a year. Very few teams can sort of fit that in right now. He's got 3 years left on his deal. It all makes it very, very challenging. Not impossible, but challenging. So, no one was expecting, I don't think, Couture to get traded in the next year. Now you talk about next offseason. I think maybe things could change a little bit. I don't know. My feeling is that because at that point, Brent Burns' contract comes off the books. You have at least one retention spot left at that point. Now, does Logan Couture at that point come to Mike Greer like Erik Karlsson did, like Brent Burns did, and said, I'd like to go to a team that's capable of winning right now? You can't close the door on that. I don't know. I mean, Logan Couture has said he's not necessarily looking the way to get out of San Jose. He loves the organization at the same time. He's going to be 36 years old next year, and at a point in his career where he wants to sort of compete for a Stanley Cup again. So certainly take Mike Greer's word right now that he's not looking to trade Logan Couture just because of his value to the team. He wants someone around who's been a career shark to sort of help these young guys along, show them what it means to be a part of this organization. That's very important for him, and I think for other people as well, just to have someone like him around. But like I said, you got to stay flexible going forward here. We'll see what happens in 2025 and 2026 if things change at that standpoint. So, but for now, yeah, Logan Couture is a shark, and they certainly hope that he's going to be available to join practice at the start of training camp and be a leader in the locker room for these young guys.
We've known since early May that the Sharks have the number one overall pick. Barring something completely unforeseen, that's going to be Macklin Celebrini. 30,000-foot view, your take on Macklin, and then beyond your take on Macklin, what Macklin, especially with the ties to the Sharks organization, what this means as a whole.
Well, I mean, it's a huge shot of hope and adrenaline for this fan base, for the organization. When you look at the player just in and of itself, you've got a number one center here. You're locked in basically for the next decade. Him and Will Smith, you're kind of set 1-2 down the middle for a really long time here. So that's one aspect of it as well. And then the other thing, about Celebrini is his compete is off the charts. And he's going to raise the level of the players around him to match that sort of intensity, match that sort of competitive will, if you will. So there's two aspects to it. Obviously, for the fan base, this is certainly some hope that things can turn around maybe a little bit quicker than maybe originally thought. But also just what he's going to do for that team, having a number one center in your lineup, you could probably just set and play, for the next decade, and then just what he's going to do for his teammates around him, sort of help them get better, as someone who just seems to win wherever he goes and produce as well.
It also comes at a time where I think we all see, although it may not happen immediately, but the Warriors in decline. And for so long, the Sharks, even while the Warriors were beginning their dynastic run, the Sharks had players that people wanted to come see. They wanted to see Jumbo. They wanted to see Burns and Pavelski and Karlsson and Hertl and Timo. You go down the list. I'm sure I'm leaving guys off Couture. But now the Sharks can start to build as the Warriors are in the final throes. They might make another run. I'm not going to put anything beyond Steph Curry and Draymond Green and whatever happens with that Klay Thompson situation. But the Warriors have been just a power piece in not just Bay Area media, but national and global media. They have had so much attention on them. I find it fascinating to see what happens now as that star dims. The Sharks have the potential to start a run of their own. And one of the other things that I look at when I compare these two situations is that the Warriors were bad for a long time, far longer than what the Sharks are dealing with. And even when they were bad, when they had young, interesting talent like Curry and Klay and Harrison Barnes, fans were intrigued. And I understand why fans in the last couple of years of the Sharks haven't really been as intrigued because, yes, like in this last year, we saw big steps from Eklund and Zetterlund. But, you know, the years before that, it wasn't as much. And you're just kind of getting through it to where you can situate yourself for the timeline we're entering upon now. And that's why I think it's fascinating to watch the Sharks try and embark. And I know it's an incredibly high bar and it's not a fair comparison, but they would love to be able to have these stars and, you know, draw things back to the South Bay after the Warriors' run seems to be coming to a close.
You know, one thing I was thinking about when if Macklin Celebrini, assuming he does, you know, sign with the Sharks and turn pro, is that you turn that in, you blow that out. You invite everybody. You invite Draymond. You invite Curry. You invite, you know, Jumbo. You invite all these legends back into the room. And that'll get not only, obviously, the people who cover the Sharks on a regular basis there, but you're talking every single news station in town,
right,
every radio station. All these people are going to show up. And you've got so much publicity about the Sharks and this new acquisition or this new kid, Jack Celebrini. You know, you try to maximize the sort of publicity that this kid's going to sort of bring you. And that's how you get people interested in the Sharks again. Like, oh, okay, they're good again. I remember that Pavelski guy, that Burns guy. You know, those guys are pretty good. And here's the thing about these last 3 or 4 years is that when fans went to games and they're thinking about buying a jersey, you're like, well, whose jersey do I buy?
Right.
I mean, do I buy this guy's jersey? Is he going to be around in a year or two? Now, you know, you could probably go to the Shark store and get a number 2 Smith jersey, or you can get a number 17 Celebrini jersey, and you can have that for 10 years. And so you talk about the interest here. It's funny, when I first moved to California, it was like people paid attention to the Sharks when the playoffs rolled around. But it was always the Warriors, Warriors, Warriors. People, even when they stunk, people were talking, well, the Warriors are 1 or 2 players away. And, you know, maybe we can get lucky in the draft. And there was always sort of that baseline conversation about the Warriors, where the Sharks were kind of like, you know, we'll see when the playoffs roll around what they do, kind of thing. So I do think these see things maybe turning a little bit. You know, if the Warriors are in sort of a, maybe entering a little bit of a rebuilding stage for them, you know, with Klay Thompson maybe on the way out and those type of players in decline. So we'll see what happens with that. But I think from the Sharks standpoint, it's like they just want to get some people back in the building again, get that place going, build some enthusiasm, and use this one season as sort of a launching pad to better things, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years down the road.
I talked to Craig Button at TSN yesterday, and he was talking about, you know, getting butts back in the seats and just saying that, you know, the tank in the playoffs or for big regular season games, that was one of the most electric places in pro sports. He said that was a destination. Guys talked about playing there. And that's, you know, like you said, you want that excitement again, and it'll be, it would be nice to have that buzz around the franchise again. And like we alluded to with the Macklin, you know, potential, there is a little bit more buzz than there was if we go back a year at this time. What's getting overlooked maybe a little bit is that 14th pick overall in the first round. It could be traded. They could move down. They could use that for a player. What do you expect to happen? I feel like Mike Greer is in this incredible situation where he has one pick that's the most, there's no, absolutely no spoiler. Like, everybody goes into this knowing what the Sharks are going to do. I assume, like, I've never been, you know, better at anything than being wrong. So here's my chance to qualify that. But he has this opportunity with a number 14 after the surefire number 1 to do whatever he wants, right?
Yeah. I mean, certainly he talked about that yesterday, the options that he has. If, you know, it is a little bit tricky to move up sometimes. Sometimes you have to give up quite a bit to do that. To move back, you know, you point to the example a couple of years ago where they were at number 11 and they traded back and they got 3 picks, you know, one turned into Bisted, Cam Lund, and then Matthias Havelid. So that was kind of a 3-for-1 deal there that the Sharks were able to sort of pull off. And I do wonder, though, what my expectation is that they will keep the number 14 pick and draft someone there. My feeling is that once you get past maybe the 20-25 mark of this first round, maybe the talent level dips down a little bit. And I know Mike Greer said yesterday about, you know, wanting to, you know, pick the best player available, but, you know, at that spot, if you're able to get a defenseman who projects to be a top four guy or even a first pair type defenseman at that spot, I think that's something you have to do. I mean, they have added some defensemen here to the pipeline over the last 2 or 3 years that are, you know, guys who could probably play at the NHL level, but you do would love to have sort of that stud to the pipeline, a guy you know can sort of be at the NHL here within 2 or 3 years and be a contributor as a defenseman, heavy minute, big guy. That's one that they're missing too. It's just a big defenseman, big mobile defenseman. And, you know, if they can get someone to, if you can run a power play, well, all the better. But certainly a guy that's, I think that's a need that the Sharks have. And my inclination is to say they'll keep the number 14 pick and use it on a defenseman, but we'll see.
Not to bury the lead, you will be at the draft at Sphere in Las Vegas on Friday. You know, just what can fans expect to you? Because I know they look to you for all the great coverage you do.
Oh, well, thanks, Ted. No, I appreciate it. You know, just try to capture the scene. You know, you're there for a reason, and that's just to capture the sights, sounds. You're at this incredible venue. You want to sort of get the experience of what it's like to be there. Who's in attendance? You know, what kind of star power are we talking about here at this venue here? You know, this is going to be an exciting time for the Sharks going forward here. So you do try to sort of, you know, find those type of stories and maybe a little bit off the beaten path, but obviously cover the important stuff as well here. So we'll be here for 2 days. Well, I mean, I'm leaving pretty soon here. So, you know, get a chance to talk to Mac with Celebrini on Wednesday. He's holding some media availability. And then obviously Friday and Saturday are the 2 days of the draft. So it's going to be exciting. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun to sort of be there and be a part of it. It's the last year where all the scouts and all the GMs are going to be in one spot. So that's certainly something that could lead to some more activity as well. So we'll see, but it's going to be very unique and a lot of fun to be at.
Curtis, appreciate your work as always, and you're being so generous with your time. Have a great time at the draft, and we'll talk soon, all right?
You got it. Thank you, Ted.
A big thanks to Curtis Peschelka of Bay Area News Group and Craig Button of TSN for joining us here on the Sharks Audio Network and our draft preview show Friday, live from the draft party at SAP Center. Dan Ruzanowski, Nick Nolenberger, Drew Remenda, and yours truly will be broadcasting live starting at 3:30 right here on the Sharks Audio Network. See you then, folks. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found for download under Sharks Hockey Digest on iTunes, Google, and Spotify, and on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app, presented by Western Digital. All music by Yogi Yend.